Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
We're going to look ahead to some of the best TV and cinema releases for the month ahead. Now, I'm joined in the studio by producer and director Brian Redden and on the line by assistant news editor at thejournal.ie, Aoife Barry, and you're both very welcome. But we want to start by mentioning that sad news overnight of the death of Lisa Marie Presley, the only child of Elvis and Priscilla Presley. She died at the age of 54, just days after she went to the Golden Globes with Priscilla in Los Angeles. She praised Austin Butler when he won Best Actor in Baz Luhrmann's acclaimed biopic Elvis. And Brian, we had spoken about that film before. You're a big Elvis fan.
I am a big Elvis fan, and I remember seeing Lisa Marie in concert in 1997, 20 years after Elvis died. I was in Memphis for the anniversary, and there was it was the very first time they did the big Elvis show, where they had the Elvis on screen with all his original band members around him playing with him. It was an amazing event, and they had it in the Pyramid, which was a big venue in Memphis. And Elvis came on screen and started saying "Don't Cry, Daddy," and then Lisa Marie came out and sang "Don't Cry, Daddy" back to him in a duet, and they blended the two voices together. It was the first time that had ever happened, and the first time she'd sang with her daddy in that way. Now, that was 1997, 20 years after his death, and I remember in the place you could have heard a pin drop. Everybody was absolutely blown away by it, because, you know, she was a very private person. She didn't participate in a lot of Elvis events, you know.
Yes.
She kind of shied away from it quite a lot. This is the first time she's really gone out publicly and embraced the legacy of her dad. So it was an amazing. And she hadn't got a bad voice. Her voice was kind of like a country and western kind of tinged voice, you know. But she kind of, it was, it's an interesting, but an interesting privilege, but also tragic life that she led. You know, she seemed to have shied, such a legacy to have at a very young age. She's only 9 when her dad dies. And bearing in mind, the Presleys are kind of cursed, because Elvis's ma died when she was 46. Elvis goes at 42. She's only 54. And they're all heart related ultimately, you know. So it was a very, very tragic.
And you met
her
son,
family,
who sadly died by suicide.
So her son died by suicide, and that was very odd. Now, his name was Benjamin Keough. So her first husband was a guy called Danny Keough. And her first child was Benjamin, a really good looking young guy, looked exactly like Elvis. And again, I was in Memphis in 2007 in a bar when I met him. And no one was really hassling him that much, because he came in kind of under the radar. And we had a few drinks together and we were chatting. He loved Ireland, absolutely loved Ireland. He'd come over here a couple of times. He'd spent some time in Cork, actually, had friends in Cork. But I saw a little bit about what the Presley life was like then, because I was heading off to a karaoke to get up and do a couple of Elvis songs. And I dragged him along and I said, come on with me and come on, we sing a song. So I was walking down Beale Street in Memphis with Elvis's grandson going, I'm going to a karaoke to sing with Elvis's grandson. It doesn't get any better than this, like, you know. And we got, and he's going, yeah, man, let's do it. Come on, let's get up and sing some songs. So just as we got to the door of the karaoke place, these two bouncers appeared out of nowhere, grabbed him and said, you ain't going nowhere. Put him in the back of a car and brought him back to Graceland. And he was screaming and shouting, going, I want to hang out with my Irish buddies. I don't want to go. I don't want to go. But they brought him away and said, no way. And
why?
I was looking at him. They were his bouncers, his bodyguards. They were looking after him and keeping an eye on him. And they were just saying, no way. He's not going to get up there and make a public show of himself. And they wouldn't let him do it. So I got a little glimpse of that. I was going, that's the life he lived.
That's the life, yeah.
He wasn't allowed to enjoy himself. Mm-hmm. He wasn't allowed to get out and be himself. You know, these guys were dragging him away. The minute he let loose, the minute he, you know, wanted to do something different or, you know, let his hair down, he was dragged away. So that's Elvis's grandson. You can imagine what it was like
for
Elvis's daughter.
Yeah, and we know about the four marriages of Michael Jackson and Nicolas Cage and all of that.
Yeah.
But as I said, she was out on Tuesday night at the Golden Globes.
Yeah, and she looked well.
Yeah, and here she is speaking to Kevin Fraser from Entertainment Tonight on the red carpet at the Golden Globes on Tuesday night.
What was it like watching Austin on stage and during this movie and the making of this movie?
It was mind-blowing, truly mind-blowing. I really didn't know what to do with myself after I saw it.
Yeah.
I had to take like 5 days to process it, mm-hmm. because it was so incredible and so spot on and so authentic that, yeah, I can't even describe what it meant.
I think the film is brilliant in its own right, but that endorsement from her and from Priscilla really helped it along, initially.
Well, they couldn't have made it without their participation. There's no way they could have made the film. And the fact that they got behind it and endorsed it so much, and particularly Butler, you know, they're really behind him performing. But it's interesting though, yeah, it's kind of bittersweet, isn't it? Because like he wins the Golden Globe and he's there and he thanks them in the speech, and the two of them are in tears crying at the ceremony watching Austin Butler. And the chances are, I'd say, he's going to be nominated for an Oscar. And who knows? I mean, he may actually win it, and she won't be around to see that, you know? She won't be around to see. Thankfully, she was around to see her father's name and legacy being reborn in many ways because of the Baz Luhrmann film. She won't didn't get to see the Oscars and get to see if he's nominated. So she's missing out and all that. So the timing of it is really odd. You know, just when her father's name is out there again.
Yes.
She passes away. So it's pretty sad.
All right. Well, look, let's move on now to our recommendations for the month ahead. And this first one actually is one of the most hyped films off the back of the Golden Globes as well. And people are talking about The Fablemans being up against The Banshees of Inisherin for Best Movie. Mm-hmm. Let's have a quick listen to it first.
What kind of movie are we going to make? You dismiss what he does. It's playful or imaginative. You could afford to be a little encouraging.
She should have been a concert piano player. What she got in her heart is what you got.
You can't just love something, you also have to take care of it.
It's more important than your hobby.
Can you stop calling it a hobby?
You stop making movies, that'll break your mother's heart.
I don't know what to do anymore.
You do what your heart says you have to.
So The Fablemans will be out in the cinema on the 27th of January, Brian. This is about his family, Spielberg's family.
Yeah, Spielberg has, you know, as saying it's semi-autobiographical. I've seen this film. Like, it's not semi-autobiographical. It is entirely his life. Everything that happens in it happened to Steven Spielberg, you know. So it's called The Fablemans as opposed to the Spielbergs. And the young fella is called Sammy as opposed to Steven. But he is essentially Steven Spielberg, played by a young actor called Gabriel LaBelle, played brilliantly by him. In fact, he's played by two actors. It starts off in Spielberg's very early life, but most of the film takes place when he's around 17 years of age. So it's the film that Spielberg's kind of been wanting to make all of his life. And interestingly, so his father only died a couple of years ago at 103 years of age, and his mother not too long before that. And I think this has given him the permission to make this film now that his parents have passed away. He feels comfortable that he's able to tell the story, because it's not an easy story to tell. It was a difficult childhood he had, and his parents divorced very early on. He was estranged from his father, and this led to, you know, he's been kind of working that out through his movies all the way through his life and through his career. Steven Spielberg's films tend to deal with family, and often dysfunctional families, and quite often relationships between fathers and their sons. So he seems to have been working this out all of his life. But it really is a brilliant, I hate to say it because it's up against The Banshees of Inisherin.
I know.
I'd love to see that do well.
But you have to give it its due.
But it really is a brilliant film. It's very emotional. It's brilliantly acted. You hear Judd Hirschkin there. He plays his kind of uncle who comes along and tells him to follow his dream. And essentially what the film is about is this young fella who falls in love with the movies, and he wants to become a filmmaker. And he starts to make home movies at home on a little 16mm film, which is what Spielberg did. Spielberg made his first film when he was 17. He grows up in a Jewish household and he experiences anti-Semitism, but he uses the movies to overcome that, because he takes the bullies who are giving him a hard time at school, and he puts them in his films, and he makes them the stars of his films, and he kind of becomes friends with them, and they see him in a different light. So it's basically how he's working out his relationship with his mother, which was difficult, with his father, which was also kind of fractious, and about growing up Jewish in that Jewish household during that period in Los Angeles.
So that's The Fablemans, out on the 27th of January. Aoife, this next one then is yours. It's called The Last of Us. And what put me off was that it's based on a video game. But then I'm hearing really good things about it. We'll hear a clip of it in a minute. But maybe just give us a sense firstly of what it's about.
Yeah, I felt the same as you. I'm not a gamer. I don't really know anything about gaming. So, I mean, I was like, okay, I don't think this is going to be one for me. But it's really great. I mean, when you make a really good prestige TV show like this, like this has been made by HBO and it's going to be on Sky Atlantic, then it's just brilliant. And one of the people behind it is one of the creators of the series Chernobyl. So it's just really high quality. It's basically a post-apocalyptic series. So we've seen many of these before, but you follow a man called Joel, who's played by Pedro Pascal, who people will know from The Mandalorian, amongst other things. He is a guy who, when we first meet him, it's I think around 2003, Bush era USA, you know, he's living his life with his daughter, and his brother pops up as well. Everything seems to be going grand. You follow his daughter around as she kind of goes about her day, and you notice things are starting to go a little bit strange. And within the kind of next 20 minutes or so, things completely explode in their world, and you realise that some strange virus has happened, and it's kind of causing people to turn into these sort of zombies. So again, it's kind of familiar ground, but it's really played really nicely. And then you fast forward forward to 20 years to today, basically, and you're in that post-apocalyptic world, and this guy, Joel, is basically tasked with bringing a young girl who's got a kind of a special power, shall we say. He's tasked with bringing her somewhere to kind of keep her safe, and you follow their journey. And in the actual game, you were in his role. It was like kind of a role-playing game, and you followed that journey. And they've taken those viewpoints for some of the scenes. You know, you feel like you're kind of watching a game while you're actually watching the film. It's a really big production. The acting is brilliant, and it really kind of grips you throughout it. I didn't get to the third episode yet, but that is being heavily praised as being a particularly good episode of this series.
Okay, so that's out on Sky Atlantic, and it's called The Last of Us. Will we take a little clip? We'll take a clip.
If you don't think there's hope for the world, why bother going on?
You haven't seen the world, so you don't know. You keep going for family.
I'm not family.
No. You're cargo. If I'm taking you with me, do what I say when I say it.
You got any advice on the best way west?
Yeah, go east. You've come this far, then you know what's out there.
You're not gonna scare us.
Scared him?
That's The Last of Us on Sky Atlantic. The next one is Hacks. I think I'm going to watch this at the weekend. I like the sound of it. It's season two on Amazon Prime, so we can catch up by watching season one, which is what you did over Christmas.
Yeah, I'm a bit late to this now because Hacks has been around for a while, but season one and two are both on Amazon Prime, and I have to say it is a joy. It is such fun to watch, you know. Jean Smart plays the part of this legendary stand-up comedian called Deborah Vance. I suspect it's kind of based on Joan Rivers. It's kind of, that's what she's like, you know, kind of an outrageous comic. She has a residency in Las Vegas, but she's getting a bit stale, and the people who own the casino in Las Vegas want her to move on, and they're moving her away from the main stage and replacing her with a younger, hipper act. Now, she's not very happy about this. Now, she's a multimillionaire, her money's made, and she's made a career, and she's been around for years, but her agent sends her a young up-and-coming comic to try and freshen up her act to write her new material, played by a woman called Hannah Einbinder, who I've never heard of before, but she's brilliant. She's actually a stand-up comic in reality. In real life, she's a stand-up comic. She's not really an actress. But anyway, she comes along and she starts to write new material for Deborah Vance. And she starts to embrace this slowly. Of course, like all these things, she hates her. First of all, can't stand her. There's a generation gap. There's a comedic gap. What she finds funny, she doesn't find funny. But slowly but surely, they start to bond, you know. And what the young comic does is she asks Deborah Vance to try and embrace her life and embrace all the problems she has in her life and make fun of them and do gags about them on stage. So reluctantly she does, and she starts to go on tour with this new show and tries and finds a whole new audience. So really, that's what it's about. And Jean Smart has won loads of awards already for playing this character, and she's brilliant. She's just so good in it. You might remember she played Kate Winslet's ma in The Mayor of Easttown.
Oh yes.
And this thing, so this is the same actress, Jean Smart, been around for a very long time, but she's having this really kind of career resurgence at the moment. Yeah, a big moment. And I would highly recommend. And you know the best thing about it? They're really short. They're like 25 minutes
Perfect.
Long each.
Perfect.
So you'll get through a load of them very quickly.
Exactly, yeah. Hacks on Amazon Prime. Two seasons out now. The latest season just released. This next one, Aoife, this is Tar with Cate Blanchett. It is universally getting no less than 4 stars, mostly 5 in any of the reviews that I've seen. It seems really intense. It's in cinemas from today. Let's have a listen to a clip.
We have a problem.
I received another weird email.
There's no reason to get caught up in any intrigue.
I'm worried. She's starting to disappear into herself.
You want to dance the mask? You must service the composer. You've got to sublimate yourself. Your ego and, yes, your identity.
You must, in fact, stand in front of the public and God and obliterate yourself.
Donald Clark in the Irish Times had an interview last weekend with the director of this, and he was explaining, Aoife, the lengths that she went to get into this part, learning the piano, learning German, like over a 9-month period of prep.
Pretty incredible. And Todd Field, the director, wrote this role for Cate Blanchett. So he wanted her from day one to be this character. Lydia Tarr, this conductor, is at the top of her game. She's a really rare person, a female conductor at the top of her game. And she's somebody who lives in a very rarefied world. And all of the detail that he put into it and that she put into creating this character really comes out in this. I just was so absorbed in this film. I felt like I was in a dream world when I left the cinema screening. It was amazing. Cate Blanchett's at the top of her game here. She's outstanding anyway. But she's so brilliant as this conductor who's preparing for the release of a book called Tar on Tar and also a big recording of Mahler's Fifth Symphony. So she's these big two big things she's working on. But meanwhile, things from her not so recent past kind of come back to haunt her, kind of literally come back to haunt her in some moments. But also she's trying to deal with kind of maybe covering things up perhaps and trying to deal with these fractious relationships around her. Nina Hoss plays her long-suffering wife, but her loving wife, and Naomi Merlant as well is there as her assistant. So she's surrounded by great actors. But this film doesn't land on kind of definitive answers on anything, and I thought that was really interesting. It looks at stuff like gender and cancel culture but refuses to tell you what it really thinks about it.
All right, and it seems to be have Oscar written all over it. Mm-hmm. Brian, your next pick is The Bear on Disney Plus. Mm. I tried to watch this over Christmas and I just found it too intense.
Yeah,
it's a bit stressful, isn't it?
It really is. I mean that kind of high voltage environment in a kitchen, and it captures it really, really well. So this thing called The Bear, it's on Disney Plus and it's on Apple TV now at the moment, but it is pretty intense. But I have to say, I binge watched the whole thing.
Did
absolutely
you?
When did you give up on it? First or second episode?
No,
far did you get
I think
into
I
it?
Watched three yeah. episodes.
It's great though, isn't it?
No, it's really good, but you know when you just want to yeah. chill. I think Hacksmore maybe more is
yeah.
my vibe.
No, yeah, you're absolutely right. This is, it is pretty, it's not an easy watch. It is pretty intense. There's a guy called Jeremy Allen White, an actor who actually just won the Golden Globe for playing the part of the bear in this. He is the bear of the title, and what he is a chef, and he's a very famous chef, a very well known chef who works in a Michelin star restaurant. But his brother has passed away, and his brother runs this steak sandwich diner, I suppose, in Chicago, in a kind of a rundown area in Chicago. So he comes home to take over the diner, which is kind of falling apart. It's got a lot of debt, and it's basically, you know, is it going to close? It's kind of, yeah, there's a possibility it may close because he owes a lot of money to a local gangster. It's kind of a complicated plot. Anyway, he tries to up the game of the restaurant. He tries to introduce better practice, work practices. He tries to introduce better tastes, better foods, better ways of doing things, more interesting sandwiches, more interesting salads, more all this kind of stuff. And he's trying to bring his Michelin star, you know, expertise to this diner. And there's a lot of resistance to that, obviously, from some of the staff in the diner. And some of them embrace it at the same time. But on top of that, he's got a lot of stuff going on with his relationship with his brother who's passed away, and his relationship with his sister, and there's a lot of darkness in the background. But what you get in this is a really intense atmosphere in the kitchen. Like when you're watching, like the scenes, for example, where he's cutting just vegetables and you're convinced he's going to hack off a finger because it's just really intense, and it's just done really, really well. And it's shot, you know, if you looked at this and didn't know it was a drama, you'd think it was a documentary. I think, mm-hmm. you know, because there's a very documentary feel to it. So it's pretty gritty and pretty heavy. There's not many laughs in it. But if you're into food and if you're into really good drama, really good acting, I'd highly recommend
it. We've loads more that we didn't get to. Ennis Main, which is a film which is out now. Shrinking on Apple TV with Harrison Ford. That horror film, Megan, not for me, but I know it will be for plenty of people and you people on Netflix. Brian and Aoife, thank you so much for that list of things to look out for over the coming weeks.